Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program, Today's Issues. Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Appreciate you listening, joining us this morning. Good morning, Walker Wildman.
Good morning.
Fred Jackson, good morning to you.
Good to be here with you again.
Ed Battagliano is not in studio with us this morning. We'll find out what Ed's schedule is the rest of the week. To be determined. Should I just tell folks what he's doing?
I don't know.
You put a mystery out there.
I'm going to go ahead and tell, and don't tell Ed that I told the world. Okay?
Okay.
He's got jury duty, potentially. So he's sitting in that. If everybody's been to that place where you sit there and they screen you out, you usually got, 100 people and they take 12 or something like that, right?
Somebody once told me the way to get out of jury duty.
Yeah?
Just say, I'm for hanging them all.
Yeah, that probably get you.
That gets you out of it.
Probably gets you out of it. On the other hand, I've heard people saying nobody just loves the idea of jury duty. I've been called, but never. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been a candidate, but never chosen. But on the other hand, you got to think, if you're ever put on trial, you sure don't want 12 people who don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Let's get this over.
Let's get this over with. Guilty. Just guilty. Give him his sentence and get this over with.
Wait a minute. Nobody's taking the stand yet.
I knew a person who wouldn't register to vote one time.
Because of that.
Because they didn't want to be called for jury duty because I think they get your name from the voter record.
That's
Is that
right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a patriotic approach to life in America, yeah. Isn't it? I don't want to sign up to – I'm not going to vote, so I'm not going to register. Secondly, I'm doing so to get out of jury duty.
Uh-huh.
Because that 1% chance in your life that you might have jury duty.
Mm-hmm. Well, they told me that, too. This person told me that, like they were proud of it. Oh, wow, we need more patriots like you. Oh, my word. Okay, so hopefully it'll be here on Wednesday. But we'll find out.
All depends on how he answers the questions.
Is that what it is? Well, we'll find out.
There's going to be a story.
Knowing Ed, if he's going to be chosen, it better be a juicy trial. You know, it better be a Perry Mason.
Uh-huh.
What was the guy, Matlock type trial?
Uh-huh.
So we'll find out from Ed. And I'll just tell you one thing. The judge needs to know that if the trial is taking place while the Boston Bruins are playing hockey, Ed will have his phone down by his side watching the game.
That's right.
That will happen. Ed will be disciplined maybe if he gets caught, but it's worth the risk for him.
Yeah.
He's a rabid, passionate Boston Bruins hockey fan.
Is he ever.
All right, much to talk about today. Walker, are we going to be keeping people posted abreast of what we're covering here?
We are. We are on Facebook right now, live streaming. We have a listener from Topeka, Kansas, already watching our Facebook Live video stream, and then, of course, all the news stories, all the original sources will be posted at the Today's Issues Facebook page.
All right, so check it out. We're live video streaming there?
We are.
Video streaming at Facebook, so check that out. All right, Fred, what's leading the news this morning?
Well, all eyes are going to be on courtroom Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Today is the sentencing hearing for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. He is the soldier who walked away from his group in 2009 there in Afghanistan. And it is believed, and certainly he has pled guilty to certainly jeopardizing the fellow soldiers who went looking for him. Mm-hmm. Several of them died. And today, as part of the sentence hearing, as I say, he's already pled guilty to these charges. He could be sentenced up to life in prison. Today, amongst those who will come in and testify at this sentence hearing are two of his fellow soldiers who were wounded going out and looking for him. The story basically is this. He walked off away from the base there in Afghanistan, and the Taliban captured him. Now, Bergdahl says he was kept in a cage and he was beaten, but there's always been suspicion about that, that he had real problems with the United States being in Afghanistan, and it's believed that he showed sympathies to the Taliban. In any event, you will remember in 2014, it was then President Barack Obama who made a very big deal in the Rose Garden ceremony with the parents of Bergdahl, saying they got him free, but we let go five terrorists that were being held in Guantanamo Bay in order to get Bergdahl back. So there you have it. We'll see what happens, but the testimony probably already underway there at Fort Bragg.
What happens to him if he's, do you call it court-martialed? Well, what do you call it exactly? Let's see, he's found guilty of desertion. What is it called exactly?
It's,
you know?
Well, I'm not sure what it's called, but
he's in a military court.
Is it life imprisonment? Court. So court martial.
Yeah, he could. That is the maximum that he could get is life in prison.
Now so you can't get the death penalty for what he did.
You could, but I think in the plea that may have been taken off the table. Gotcha. His lawyers are going to try to argue before the judge there that the 5 years that he spent in captivity, and I'm doing air quotes here, that ought to be counted against his sentence, and the fact that he was willing to plea guilty to all of this, that ought to be taken into consideration, particularly, you know, lawyer stuff that they do in these kinds of cases. But we'll have to wait and see. I think if you ask most people in the military, there's not much sympathy for Sergeant Bergdahl.
No, especially if you are the parent or spouse of one of the six soldiers who died.
Yes.
Because this coward abandoned his troops and went and converted to Islam with the Taliban and shared intel with the Taliban on our military information, which is all, there are all reports on that. So that's life in prison is the minimum that he could be given.
It's interesting, too. The defense tried to bring in comments from then presidential candidate Donald Trump. Who certainly let it be known how he felt about Bergdahl during the campaign trail last year. He referred to Bergdahl as a dirty, rotten traitor.
What did you mean by that? Exactly. Just, what do you think the president's trying to say there? What's that code for?
That is plain and simple Donald Trump saying this is a guy who ought to be, how do you put it, who deserved to be executed by firing squad or thrown out of a plane without a parachute.
Now, contrast that to what President Obama said about Bergdahl. What did he say?
Hey, we always bring our guys home.
No, he served with distinction and honor, right?
Yeah, distinction and honor.
Isn't that what he said?
That's what he said with Bergdahl's parents standing there.
After we knew what the story was.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then President Obama traded five top Taliban leaders for Sergeant.
Let them go.
Bergdahl. It made you wonder at that time, well, who's saddest? President Obama on.
Exactly.
Huh? I mean, that does make you ask that question when that kind of thing happens. You go, my word, what kind of trade is this?
Yeah. Well, in the bigger picture of all of this, you know, President Obama and his Attorney General Eric Holder spent years trying to empty Guantanamo Bay.
Well, they did. Basically, and didn't they?
Basically, they kept sending a bunch home, but they also wanted to get the remaining guys into civilian courts here in the United States. And then the other thing they were trying to do is set them up in a prison here in the United States, shut down Guantanamo. And even Democrats were opposed to that.
Right.
You're going to be able to write a book even about that, his attitude.
So when is this trial for Bergdahl?
The trial is, well, he's already pled guilty. This is a sentence hearing that started today.
Hearing, that's what I meant. That's today?
Today.
So will we know by the end of the day what the sentencing is?
Usually the judge will want to take some time to consider all the testimony that he will hear today, but I have to think that it'll just be a matter of days before we get the final decision.
And this is taking place in Fort Bragg?
Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Okay. Yep. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, Tim, with Walker and Fred. How's the NFL doing, Fred?
The NFL, you know, I actually caught a little bit. Now, I'm not a major football fan like you guys are. I'm more on the hockey side of things with the Tagliano there. But I did watch a couple of quarters yesterday of the San Francisco 49ers and Dallas. Because if I had to pick a team in the NFL, it would be the Dallas Cowboys. And
who haven't knelt yet, by the way.
That's right. They did
none of their players have knelt for the national anthem this whole season.
No, that's right. And yesterday, I think at least seven of the 49ers knelt.
Yeah.
Despite what happened last week and the call that the expectation of the league is you don't do that. But I saw the first half of that football game, and it looked like a runaway for the Cowboys, and I think it was at the end of the day. Was it 45-10 or something like mm-hmm. that? But we've been talking about the impact on the crowds, and I just before coming into the studio, there was one figure, because we were talking about this at our story meeting this morning. One of the stadiums yesterday that seats just over 70,000, there are only 53,000 tickets sold for that particular game. So I think this is having an impact. We were talking on the weekend, one of the local restaurants at our home base here in Tupelo has decided they're not going to show any NFL games on their TVs. It's kind of a sports-type driven themed restaurant, and they're not going to show any NFL games on their TVs.
Yeah. I'm we're more college football guys uh-huh. than the NFL. I enjoy watching football at any level. Mm-hmm. I have my whole life. I enjoy the sport, but I'm not, some people are passionate about the NFL. I'm not really that, but I'll watch, mm-hmm. I would probably watch more than I'm watching right now. I've kind of lost interest. Mm-hmm. I'll check out the Cowboys every once in a while because Dak Prescott.
That's right.
Went to school at Mississippi State, so I follow him. But the rest of it, I really don't. You know, this whole thing's made it hard for a lot of people to mm-hmm. find interest in the NFL because these guys are disrespecting our country, mm-hmm. and they're continuing to do it. And they know how upset the fans are, mm-hmm. and I guess some of them. Now, it's a small percentage of the players that are actually doing this.
I read this morning, I think totally across the NFL yesterday, I think it was something like 22 players that knelt.
Yesterday, total?
Total.
Yeah. That's a tiny percentage then of the
exactly.
of all the players, so that needs to be noted.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they're bad, it's bad PR.
Yeah.
Again.
The damage is done.
Mm-hmm. Damage is done, and I tell you, the scene I never will forget is the Oakland Raiders football team sitting on the bench.
Yeah,
they weren't even kneeling. Yeah. They were all sitting on the bench.
Yeah,
during the national anthem. That's to me that's lower than kneeling.
Yeah.
Sitting on the bench. That's just awful. But I don't know if they're still doing that. I'm talking about the whole Oakland Raiders team. But anyway, the point is that the numbers are down.
Mm-hmm.
Both. People go into the games in person,
mm-hmm.
and also, according to OneNewsNow.com, our story this morning, OneNewsNow.com, is that the 10%, they're down 10%, the NFL is, in viewership?
Viewership, yeah.
Now, if you translate, I don't know how they do the television advertising money between the networks and the NFL. But, the way it works is the NFL provides the product. The television networks provide the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the advertisers buy time
mm-hmm.
according to how many people are watching the game. And there's a rate card,
mm-hmm.
obviously, that goes with this. Well, I don't know if that's adjusted. Maybe it is adjusted weekly or every other week. In other words, doing that as opposed to, let's say, buying a block of advertising for the NFL season in July, mm-hmm. okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they sell it like that. I don't know. Maybe it works. Maybe they do both. But my point is, I think where the real damage is going to come to the – when this is really going to show up, mm-hmm. that is the loss of big-time money for the NFL is next year.
That's right.
Because if people don't – let's say 10% of people don't buy their season tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe you have people standing in line to take up those season tickets. I don't know. But if you have a 10, 15, 20% drop in demand for season tickets,
mm-hmm.
for example, and for teams all across the country, mm-hmm. if also you have a 10% drop in television viewership,
mm-hmm.
That's going to be factored in next year, too. The advertisers are not going to be willing to pay as much money.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to admit, because you got fewer people watching the games.
That's right.
If that's the case, that's going to translate down to the owners,
mm-hmm.
and the owners are going to say, "Sorry, players, we're going to have to reduce your salaries by 10%."
Right.
This will happen. Mm-hmm. The owners won't just eat it.
No.
They'll pass it on down to the players, and they'll say, "Listen, guys, you may have wanted to take a knee. Some of you may have wanted to take a knee, but the 10% of the fan base is taking a knee on y'all, and we're not." You know, I'm not eating the money. You are.
Right. That's right.
You know, you're going to have to take a 10% pay cut. Well, you get that kind of thing going on, then a lot of these players are going to look in their locker room and going, "See what you've done? You cost us for what exactly?
Mm-hmm.
For what exactly?" You know, these guys who are protesting are Americans, and they have freedom of speech rights, mm-hmm. but they can take their activities of protesting whatever it is they want to protest outside the stadium.
That's right.
Do it on their own time and on their own dime. People would not have a problem with that at all. You know what I'm saying? Even if you disagreed with their cause, but when you bring it into the workplace, mm-hmm. and you're sort of in the face of the fans with your disrespect for the country and for the flag, for the national anthem, what gets me too is these guys who say, "Well, we're not disrespecting the country or the flag." Excuse me? That's the whole point of you doing what you're doing.
That's right.
You're taking a knee during the national anthem, mm-hmm. when the flag is being honored. That's your whole point. Don't tell me you're not disrespecting the country when, in fact, you're doing it when the most visible symbol of our country is on display.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the ratings are down as far as people watching the NFL. The interest, I think, is down. And according to the attendance I saw yesterday, the pictures, yep. of stadiums. Now, maybe they were selective. I was 4 or 5 stadiums I saw,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they've got losers as teams. I don't know all the factors, but I did see that, you know, half the stadium was empty,
yep.
in a lot of these NFL cities.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, Tim with Walker and Fred. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, we need to do a little bit of catching up here. You may or may not have heard of a speech that former President George W. Bush gave last week. He was in New York, I believe, to accept some kind of an award. But he used the speech. Now, he never mentioned President Donald Trump's name. But I want you to listen to a portion of the speech, and, well, we'll leave it up to you to decide whether he is referring to President Trump.
Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seems more vulnerable to conspiracy theories and outright fabrication. We've seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty. At times, it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together. Argument turns too easily into animosity. Disagreement escalates into dehumanization. Too often we judge other groups by their worst examples while judging ourselves by our best intentions. Forgetting the image of God we should see in each other. We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism. We've forgotten the dynamism that immigration has always brought to America. Our identity as a nation, unlike many other nations, is not determined by geography or ethnicity, by soil or blood. This means that people of every race, religion, ethnicity can be fully and equally American. It means that bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed.
Now, there was nobody in that room that misunderstood what the former president,
yeah.
who he is referring to.
Right.
Well, a lot of what he said right there I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some good words there he used,
yeah.
right up to the point where he got to bigotry and white supremacy. What did he say about that?
He said that they've become emboldened under President Trump. He didn't use
his
name.
He didn't use President Trump's.
In these times, this has become white supremacy, nationalism has been...
Right, that's the left's mantra.
Yeah.
Yep.
Against President Trump, and yep. evidently President Bush has bought into it.
Yep, exactly.
Did he call out Black Lives Matter?
No.
He didn't?
Oh, no.
Well, he called out white.
And what he's doing is, if you love America and you want to look out for the best interest of America first, you are first off, a nationalist. There's nothing wrong with nationalism. It means you care right. about your country before you care about other countries.
Yeah.
Right. There's nothing, it's not right. racist. You care about your country, black or white, whatever skin color you have, you care about your country. There's nothing wrong with that. But they try to lump in nationalism with white supremacy, right. and they yeah. so.
And you know, you remember his reference to, he made reference to the importance of immigration to this country. No one's arguing against that.
I know
that.
That.
No yeah. one's arguing.
Again, it's the argument of the left.
That's code speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't say
he's
illegal
for open borders. Immigrant.
Of course he is.
2016, we let in the most refugees as we ever have.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that President Bush, he's an open borders guy,
oh,
I guess,
yeah.
because what he's saying right there is, I do think this is the pile-on on President Trump.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, you know, President Trump, sometimes when he was a candidate too, sometimes says and does things mm-hmm. that I wish he wouldn't, and that I've found offensive, quite frankly. But let me tell you why he does what he does, okay? He does what he does because he's always fighting, having to fight back against all these people, all of them.
That's right.
The liberal Republicans, the liberal media, the Democrats, Hollywood, they all come after him every single day in a vicious,
mm-hmm.
vicious way. President Jimmy Carter even cited that mm-hmm. the other day.
Here are some of the quotes.
President Trump is only, he's only fighting back. He's a New York street fighter.
Yeah. This is Jimmy Carter in an interview with the New York Times. Quote, I think the media have been harder on Trump than any other president, certainly that I've known about. This is Carter to the New York Times. He added that he thought the media, quote, feel free to claim that Trump is mentally deranged and everything else without hesitation. And Carter also doesn't believe the current president's America First strategy is out of step with the larger world. Spoiling international relations. Well, he might be escalating it, but I think that precedes Trump, he told the Times. The United States has been the dominant character in the whole world, and now we're not anymore, and we're not going to be. Russia's coming back, and India and China are coming forward. So what he's saying is that the media is piling on and accusing Trump of all those things
yes.
that Bush was talking about there, mm-hmm. trying to connect him to white supremacy, et cetera, et cetera. And what Jimmy Carter is saying, wait a minute, this is absolutely crazy. And he notes, as we've noted, no other president in recent memory, and perhaps ever, has ever been attacked by the media like they attacked President Trump.
Well, I guess this would be the first time in my life I've agreed with Jimmy Carter over George W. Bush.
That was surprising.
I do think George W. Bush, the president, his first part of his remarks there are well taken. He was talking about the need for civility
mm-hmm.
and in our political discourse and all these things. But then he switched. Then he sort of switched to, he didn't say anything about illegal immigration. That was the whole issue.
Right.
It's the whole issue. It's not immigration per se. It's how do we stop illegal immigration into our country with people flooding in here by the millions? There's nothing wrong with wanting to stop that.
Right.
And to call somebody who wants to stop that a racist or a bigot, and as much as President Bush right there tried to do the same thing, that's just wrong and unfair. Mm-hmm. And then he threw in bigotry and white supremacy, and you think he's talking about President Trump right there, Walker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's talking about his voters.
That's
you know, and here's the thing. These immigrants, both legal and illegal, come in here and they get on welfare, they don't find jobs, and they go to our school systems, don't pay taxes. And we're supposed to be okay with that, according to President Bush. All those presidents,
right.
they're all globalist elites who are out of touch with the American people.
Yeah,
right. And where does the white supremacy accusation come from? Where's that manifested itself? Was that Charlottesville? Is that it?
That's all they got.
That one day in Charlottesville?
Right.
Yep.
That's so he's a white supremacist because of that?
Yep.
We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek of Cross Examined.
Viruses are harmful, obviously, to the body, and they're also idea viruses are harmful to the mind and therefore harmful to behavior, which can be harmful to eternity. And not just eternity, but consequences here on Earth.
We'll also hear news headlines and analysis from Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Did you know your herds or fields or even your tractor could be used to support the cause of Christ for generations to come? As a farmer or rancher, you know the value of cultivating your resources. Crops are sown, harvests are stored or sold depending on the best price. Sometimes it makes sense to feed your crop to your own animals. It takes heart and shrewd management to keep your operation going. If your heart is for the Lord, consider designating your assets in a way that makes sense for your family while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. A representative of the AFA Foundation can show you how to bless AFA long after your own needs have been met. Contact the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or email foundation@afa.net. Learn how to make the most of your resources and leave a legacy to continue the work of the American Family Association.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
From director Kevin Sorbo and executive producer Sean Hannity comes Let There Be Light. Saul Harkins is a man who has turned away from God, but a near-fatal car crash gives him one last chance to renew his life, his family, and his faith. Let There Be Light, rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters October 27. More information is available at lettherebelightmovie.com.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Ridgecrest is a small town in Southern California. They grow mighty big patriots in that part of the country, home to the military's China Lake, also home to Burroughs High School. And what those kids did before the homecoming football game the other day should make the entire nation beam with pride. The team came out onto the football field waving American flags as God Bless the USA played on the public address system. You can watch the entire video of what happened on my website, toddstarnes.com. Coach Todd Mather was on my nationally syndicated talk show. He says his boys were frustrated by what's going on in the National Football League. And he said they wanted to send a message that they respect the flag and the national anthem. It's a scene unfolding on many high school campuses across the Fruited Plain. Teenage football players taking a stand while professional football players take a knee. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman, and Ed is not here today. If you're wondering where Ed is, he's seeing if he's going to be good enough to have jury duty or not. So he'll be back, I guess, if he gets on the jury, he may not be back for a while.
Yeah. Oh. He said this week, this entire week, he set aside, so.
Yeah. If I ever get jury duty, and I like I said, I've been there once. I wasn't selected. I just hope it's something, you know, exciting. And
yeah.
You know, like a novel. I'm involved in a.
Not a misdemeanor, like speeding or something.
Don't give me a dude has three speeding tickets. You know what I'm saying? We need to decide what to do. That's just a. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No.
Give me something juicy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Y'all agree with me? If you got jury duty, you want something. You want something.
Something worthwhile.
You got to sink your teeth into. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We'll see what Ed comes back with. Fred Jackson here with me. Walker Wildman. Walker, we still humming over there on Facebook.
We are. We're humming on Facebook. We have a lot of listeners watching and commenting, saying they love the show, love the content.
Anybody saying they don't?
Nope. I filter all those out. No, I'm joking. Only kind comments today. Every once in a while we have some unkind comments, but that's all right.
Okay. Yeah. As long as they're constructive criticism.
There you go.
Not just name calling.
Right.
Anyway, check out our Today's Issues video live streaming there on Facebook and participate there in the comment section. You posting the stories we're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Before we go to our guest, I wanted to, there was one more story you wanted to mention, Fred.
Yeah, we were talking about the issue of illegal immigration and the problem that has been with successive presidents over the years. And because Donald Trump is trying to do something about it, he's being attacked right and left. Well, there's a very interesting story. I think most of our audience is familiar with just the horrific fires in California over the last month or so. Well, listen to this, folks. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Acting Director Tom Homan has confirmed that a man arrested in connection with setting a fire in Sonoma County, Wine Country, is an illegal alien from Mexico who has been twice returned to his home country. Homan also confirmed that ICE has issued a detainer request for Jesus Fabian Gonzalez five times now in the past year alone, including the one issued October 16th in relation to his most recent arrest on suspicion of arson. Now, here's what's interesting in this story. Obviously, interesting on its face, an illegal alien, now one of those arrested in connection with these horrific fires that have caused at least $1 billion worth of damage, not to mention the lives lost out there. But ICE has been after Sonoma County in California to hand this guy over. They haven't, because they are one of those sanctuary city areas. And of course, now the whole state, thanks to Governor Jerry Brown, has become a sanctuary state. In other words, we're not going to cooperate with federal immigration officials to turn these people over. So that's what, you know, this is what has happened in this case. This guy has been sent home to Mexico a couple of times. He waltzes back through our sieve of a border in some sections, and he commits these crimes. And still, this Sonoma County there in California, which is in the, I guess, the Napa area of California, they refused to hand him over to ICE.
Wasn't that the case with the guy who killed Kate Steinle? Wasn't he five times deported?
I think it was more than five.
Interesting you bring that up. His trial is starting today, by the way.
It is?
Yeah.
Deportation doesn't mean squat.
Not when you have an open border, does it?
I mean, quite frankly, I wouldn't even deport him at all.
Why bother?
Because you're wasting money. You're wasting time and money. I hope people don't misunderstand me. I'm in favor of our federal immigration laws being enforced, and I'm in favor of the wall being built and tighter security. I'm just saying, if a guy can come back five times without any repercussions at all, then obviously the deportation deterrent does not work.
Right.
So if it doesn't work at all, then why do it at all? That's what sanctuary states or sanctuary cities want. They don't want any deportation for anybody.
I tell you what, if I'm a member of a family who lost a loved one.
Yeah, like Kate Steinle's family.
Exactly. Or I lost property.
Right.
I lost my home and everything in it.
Right.
I'm going to sue Sonoma County.
Well, that's a good point.
Yep.
You may hold them accountable for letting
them accountable.
Because ICE, you're saying ICE wanted this guy.
They wouldn't hand him over.
Yeah. You know, this is a whole different issue, but I wonder maybe we need to have somebody on who understands how they can find out who started a fire. That seems like almost an impossible task. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
To me, but they have experts who do this. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who was an arson specialist who could tell you, look at a home and tell you where it started or how it started.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe they can do the same thing with forest fires.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, somebody throws a cigarette out the window.
Right.
In a very dry, and it starts a fire. How do you know that? Yeah. You know, I guess they have ways to know who starts, or at least in this case, who. They're accusing this fella, right? This illegal immigrant.
That's right.
Of starting the fires. Now, are they saying he did it intentionally or unknowingly?
They don't say.
But if you're charged, I guess it is.
That's right. You're culpable.
They're calling that suspicion of arson, and arson would be intentional. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, where we have a guest this hour, and Jonathan Kahn is his name. Jonathan is well known for his book, The Harbinger. He's got a new book out called The Paradigm. subtitled The Ancient Blueprint That Holds the Mystery of Our Times. And he joins us now. Jonathan, good morning to you.
Great to be with you, Tim.
Hey, Jonathan, tell our listeners, do you still serve the church there in New Jersey?
Yeah. The Jerusalem Center of Beth Israel is about 20 minutes from New York City in Wayne, New Jersey, and it's like United Nations of people. But yeah, I've been doing that for years. I haven't stopped.
So is it a Messianic church?
Yeah, Messianic in the flavor, the biblical flavor. But the people who are there are from literally every nation
all over
and tribe and tongue.
I got you. Well, now you got a new book out called The Paradigm, right?
Yep, just came out.
Okay, now I got to tell you, anytime I see Mystery of Our Times on a book, as if Jonathan Kahn has finally discovered something that everybody else missed here. Tell us, I'm just poking at you a little bit here, but
That's fine. That's what I expect when I'm with you.
I want to distinguish what you've done here from, say, a National Enquirer story, which talks about the stars lining up and everything. So,
there's no UFOs and no nuns being abducted with all that.
Okay. Well, tell us about the book, The Paradigm.
Yeah. The Paradigm is, if you can imagine, if they had discovered a master blueprint that lies behind literally everything that is taking place now, one that goes back over 2,500 years from the Bible. That not only gives or lies behind the events that are taking place, or gives the events, but also literally gives the timing of when events take place, from the year to the, in some cases, gives the exact dates. Imagine if it gave the people or the people on the world stage today, and that behind every major leader, there's an ancient leader in the Bible, a prototype leader that this one is following. It even gives the time that leader will be allotted on the world stage. And so it is something that, and this is going to sound, of course, like a gigantic claim, but if we had known this, or if I didn't know this before this year, if I had known the paradigm, we'd known the paradigm, you could actually have put in your calendar, you could have put the major events of our time, you could have put it, you could have marked the day or the year or the date years before it happened. And what if we could open up this thing, this paradigm? Could it have a warning of where we are, where we've been, and where we're going? That the paradigm is that master blueprint from the Bible.
How did you discover this?
Well, I was not looking for it, Tim. I was going to do another book, and with the inauguration of Donald Trump in January, it's just started coming, very much as with the way the Harbinger came. I mean, it just started coming, one thing after the other, kept getting bigger and bigger, where I was blown away, and it happened within a month to 2 months in January. And then, I told the publisher, he said, you got to get this thing out. You got 60 days to write it. So I did that, and that's in the spring, and then it was edited, and then now it just came out.
What is it called again?
The Paradigm.
The Ancient.
And the paradigm means literally a blueprint or a pattern. And that's, we're following this thing. It's kind of like the Harbinger is showing the signs of warning, but we are following this. It even names names, and it takes us all the way, you can go back a quarter century, all the way up to where we are right now. I can give you some examples of it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the first thing, the big picture is that you've got a nation that has been falling away from God. This is ancient Israel, falling away from God, driving God out of its government, calling evil good, good evil, promoting sexual immorality, offering up its children, beginning to persecute the righteous. Well, we've been watching America, that had known God, falling away in the same pattern. But then, in ancient Israel, you get this time period where things start accelerating, where an anti-biblical morality starts literally taking over or prevailing over biblical morality. You have people on the throne who are actually endorsing this. Well, in the last quarter century, we've seen this in America. We've seen an acceleration, and we've had actually people in the highest places of government endorsing, anti-biblical morality. And what happens is, in this period in ancient Israel, you've got a king who rises up. His name is Ahab, or we know him as Ahab, and he knows of the Bible, he knows of God, but he ends up promoting, everything that goes against God. He's the first king to promote Baal worship, which is child sacrifice and sexual immorality. And so he wavers back and forth, but he's accelerating this thing. Well, about 25 years ago in America, we had what was called, they called it the culture war. And it was centered on a man who rises up. His name is Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton is going to follow the paradigm of Ahab. Literally, I mean, he knows of the Bible, born in the Bible Belt, but he's going to endorse policies that go against the ways of God. He's the first president ever to endorse abortion, which is basically child sacrifice, sexual immorality, and all these things. He wavers back and forth, but he's going to follow his pattern. And now, when did Bill Clinton come on the national stage? Well, the world stage. It was 1979 when he was elected governor of Arkansas. Went from there to the presidency. It ends in 2001, January. That's the end. So it goes from 1979, the years of Bill Clinton, to 2001. That's 22 years. Open up the Bible, the First Kings, and it will say, Ahab, son of Omri, reigned in Samaria for a period of 22 years. He's going to follow it exactly. But of course, Ahab wasn't alone, Tim. I mean, he had a partner. And by the way, this is not about people. We got to pray for the people. We have no enemies. We pray for their salvation. But he has a partner, and his partner is named Isabel or Jezebel. She's different. She grows up in a cosmopolitan society of Phoenicia. Her father is the priest of Astarte, or this goddess. So she grows up venerating female power. She marries Ahab, moves to this conservative land, but she never adopts conservative values. In fact, she sees them as something to war against. So she tries to overturn the biblical values of Israel, and she endorses Baal worship, which is child sacrifice. So the two are a team, literally a co-regency. So what happens in America? We have Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, not that she knows what she's doing, but she's following the paradigm of Jezebel. How so? She grows up in liberal values. She venerates female power, marries, goes to the Bible Belt to marry Bill Clinton, but she never adopts the values. She actually makes a famous statement. She says, deep-seated religious beliefs have to be changed. This is Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
So abortion can expand. I mean, I cannot imagine a more Jezebelian statement than that.
Wow.
And she becomes, it's like a co-presidency, as we well know. And she becomes, just as Jezebel was the chief advocate of Baal worship, which is child sacrifice, Hillary Clinton has become the chief champion of abortion in America. She's actually honored by Planned Parenthood as the champion, the abortion champion of the century. And it gets deeper, Tim. I'm going fast because I want to give you some things of it because there's so much. But one thing is this. During the times of Ahab and Jezebel, there's actually a scandal that takes place. And it's a personal scandal. It's a scandal of Naboth. When they break all the Ten Commandments, basically, to steal this vineyard from this guy. Well, it becomes a scandal, and it's exposed by the prophet Elijah, and he pronounces judgment. Well, what it means is that the Clinton years will not only be times of going against biblical values, but it'll be times of scandal. Well, we all know that. And the key scandal, or the big one, was the Monica Lewinsky scandal, where he was impeached for it. Well, here's the thing. In Ahab's scandal and Ahab's fall, it is linked to the tribe of Levi. I won't go through how. There's a lot to it, but he's linked to the tribe of Levi. Could a presidential scandal be actually linked to the tribe of Levi? Well, it's amazing, but the name Levi, from the name Levi, you get the name Levin. From Levin comes Lewin. From Lewin comes the name Lewinsky. The Lewinsky scandal literally means the Levite scandal, the same tribe that led to the downfall of Ahab. And when did it take place in the Bible? It takes place in the 19th year after Ahab comes on the stage. Well, with Bill Clinton in 1979 comes on the stage, add 19 years, it comes out to 1998. 1998 is the year of the scandal. But it's going to get even more.
Oh, you better stop right there, man. You're going to give away your whole book.
It's okay.
Okay, I got one more question for you. By the way, tell folks the title of the book and where to get it.
Yeah, it's called The Paradigm, the Master Blueprint Behind the Mystery of Our Times, and it's going to go all the way up to, just to tell you, it's going to have every single, it's going to go up to Barack Obama is in the mystery, Donald Trump's victory is all there, even the time, everything is there, up to where we are now and what the future holds.
All right. Well, it's available.
It's available. Paradigm is everywhere. Amazon online. Walmart. Everywhere you can find a book, you can order it online.
Jonathan Kahn, CAHN, is our guest. Jonathan, well, thanks so much for your sharing with us this morning. And the Harbinger. How many copies of the Harbinger end up selling?
It's been over 2 million, and it keeps going because it keeps coming. The things in the Harbinger have not stopped, so it keeps going. It's over 2 million.
All right. Well, listen, Jonathan, thanks for being our guest. Appreciate it very much. Take care.
Always great to be with you, Tim.
Okay, bye-bye.
God bless.
Jonathan Cahn, C-A-H-N. I've read through the book, haven't read the whole book in detail. Fascinating.
Is it ever?
Huh?
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is truly amazing. Now, I've heard people refer to Hillary Clinton as Jezebel before.
He said Jezebelian. That was the first time that word's ever been used on this show that I'm aware of. Jezebelian. But he said, what did he say?
Yeah, she's the Jezebel of that 22-year reign of Ahab. Bill Clinton was in office for 22 years. Jezebel's history, she went to a conservative part of the country. I guess he's comparing
Arkansas
to the time that Hillary and Bill were in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And a champion of abortion. I tell you, that's amazing. Now, he left us with this tease, though.
I know. You have to
this
get
book takes us all the way up to, he said, to President Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that.
Well, like I told Jonathan there, you know, I'm always a little skeptical when I see that, because the subtitle is the ancient blueprint that holds the mystery of our times. But I would just say to you, better give him a fair hearing talking about Jonathan, before you just dismiss him there.
I'm sure Hollywood will do a movie on this. Starring.
All right. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman. Next story, Fred, is what?
Next story, the lady with the cowboy hat. She's become famous. In fact, she calls herself a rock star now. That is Democrat Congresswoman Frederica Wilson. And she is the one who's made a whole lot of news. She said she was in the vehicle with the widow of one of those soldiers who died in Niger. And the story is that President Trump called her to express his condolences. And according to Congresswoman Wilson, that he was, President Trump, disrespectful. All right, a lot of people aren't buying her story, even though she says she's a rock star and you see her face all over the cameras these days, all over the TV. Mm. Newt Gingrich, not at all impressed with Congresswoman Frederica Wilson. This is what he had to say when asked about the whole issue of Frederica Wilson and her claims against President Trump.
Just shut up and leave it alone. Tells you, I think, the level of hatred on the left that's left them, frankly, a little bit deranged and unable to show any decency. What you saw in a very simple contrast, a man who has served his country for over 40 years, risked his life, lost his son, dedicated himself to defending America, and frankly, a politician who doesn't know anything, has no shame, has no sense of understanding, and can't figure out the time has come to keep her mouth shut. Now, I think that's the contrast.
And what he's referring there to, what happened in the midst of all of this, is President Trump's chief of staff, General John Kelly, came out to the podium during the White House press briefing the other day and said he used this word, stunned by the remarks of Congresswoman Frederica Wilson, that she would try to politicize something as sacred as these calls that presidents have to make from time to time to the families of soldiers who have died in action. And General Kelly, as I say, said he was stunned that she would do this, try to politicize this. And, of course, General Kelly, he lost a son in Afghanistan in the battle there. So that's what Newt Gingrich was contrasting there.
If you haven't watched General Kelly's press conference at the White House on
last Thursday.
I think it was Thursday. You have to watch that, folks.
Yeah.
Close your door or whatever, but you need about 10 minutes of privacy or at least uninterrupted time, and you need to watch General Kelly's. He's the chief of staff for President Trump, but as Fred said, he's a general.
Yes.
And he lost a son in Afghanistan, but he goes through what happens when we lose a soldier. And how that process is handled, and it's just deeply moving and very patriotic, makes you and just gave me a greater admiration and respect for the military on how they honor the fallen.
Yeah.
And so that to Where can they go watch that, Walker? Just type.
I just posted it on our Facebook page.
So go to Today's Issues Facebook page, and you can watch that. Walker's got it there for you. Mm-hmm. You can watch that press conference by General Kelly. It's a press conference, but it's more of him. He's responding on behalf of the president and himself personally to this whole episode with this Congresswoman.
Frederica Wilson.
The one that wears the
cowboy hat.
Cowboy hat. Is it a cowgirl hat or a cowboy hat?
Who knows? I don't know.
It's a different color every day. She's very, very flamboyant.
She's exploited the death of a soldier, unfortunately.
Right. Here's how that happened, just to be clear how that happened, because I was a little bit confused on the timeline last week. The president, this was one of the soldiers, or Marines.
One of the four.
One of the four that we lost in Niger.
Correct.
Okay, that's a country in Africa.
They were ambushed.
And they were ambushed by some ISIS types, okay, and killed. We don't know all the circumstances yet. There'll be an investigation of how these guys died and why they died. But anyway, so President Trump decides he's going to call the widow of this gentleman, what's his name?
Of Sergeant David Johnson.
Johnson. Mm-hmm. So he he asked General Kelly, how do I do this properly, right? And then he proceeds to call the widow, and this is the phone call that's at controversy, because the widow, evidently this congresswoman, was in within earshot or eavesdropping, or I don't know, or
she was in the car,
maybe had a speaker phone or something like that. I don't know exactly. So the president calls and expresses condolences to the widow. Well, the next day, was it, this congresswoman comes out and blasts the president for being insensitive.
Yes.
Or tacky, or whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. She was criticizing the president. And keep in mind, she's a hard left Democrat.
That's right.
And that was the part that was inappropriate for her to do. And you know, in that situation, even I didn't have privy to the, no, none of us, the phone conversation between the widow and the president is not public, nor what it should be, nor will it ever be. But, you know, the idea that a congresswoman would come out and try to politicize this by criticizing the president for how he handled this phone call, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, can we not have, the idea that the president would want to call her in the first place represents sympathy, and he has a heavy heart about us losing a soldier or a Marine, I guess, and so he wants to reach out to her and call. There's nobody's taping this. This is not a ceremony. Nobody's getting credit for this, as it were. And I don't know what he said or how he said it exactly, but his heart's desire was to be kind to this woman, right? Mm-hmm. On behalf of the office of the presidency.
Yeah.
And so for them this congresswoman to go public with her criticisms of how the president talked to the widow just seems, I don't know, that seemed very tacky to me, and to say the least, very tacky. That makes you think it's all politically driven when you hear her talk.
Oh, she's having a great time with this.
She says she's a rock star now?
She says she's a rock star.
That's a sick woman right there.
Yeah.
That's a sick person.
Yeah.
That's what I meant earlier, why the president, he just catches it every day, all day, from all different directions. When he fights back, you know, you can't blame him.
No.
Right.
You can't blame him. All right, we'll be back after the news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.